way they sense that it's exciting is to do it. You know, the whole maker movement, and to actually design and then build a chip. That's something that we want people to do and see it working its magic. Well, you know, colleges, we understand it's hard to get this equipment. It's expensive to get this training. We'll likely have grant programs to enable that. We want to excite people to be investing in these things.
Welcome to Forward with NACI, Inspiring Entrepreneurial Action, a podcast that shares the stories of everyday entrepreneurs, entrepreneurial leaders, and the communities that support us. We hope that this diverse collection of stories brings you inspiration, inspires you to take action, and ignites entrepreneurship in your community as we make our way forward together.
Welcome to this episode of Forward with NACI. I'm Rebecca Corbin, and I'm really delighted to have two very special guests in our audience today that are doing some very good work on behalf of all American citizens. They have very interesting background in both business and other things. So we're going to jump right into it and begin, as we normally do on our podcast, by having our guests introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about something that shaped your career and the things that you're doing today. So we will begin with Donna Dubinsky. So Donna, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm delighted to be here. My background is as a private sector person. I was a business school grad, went into high tech very early in my career, spent the early years at Apple and for founding Silicon Valley sort of stuff. Then was a founder of Palm and Handspring, so helped be at the forefront of handheld computing. And I have taken a diversion from my private sector business to serve in the government at the request of the Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, who I know from prior work together, who asked me to come in and help stand up the CHIPS Act. So I've been basically based in Washington here, helping work on this amazing and important legislation and figuring out how we're going to implement this program. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's terrific. And we're going to get into the CHIPS program. I know I learned a lot about it when we had a chance to connect. But I think for the people that are listening, we have listeners, you know, in I think close to 850 American cities and around the world. It's exciting to have a woman who's sort of a trailblazer in tech. I mean, how would we, any of us, get along without our iPhones or whatever form of phone that you're using today? So I'm excited to hear from you. And we have your colleague, Jessica Nicholson, on the line. And I know you're relatively new to the Department of Commerce, but you're doing some great work. So please introduce yourself and talk a bit about your background.
So actually, I've been at the Department of Commerce since around 2013, with only a short hiatus when I left the government temporarily. But I've essentially spent my 20-year career in the federal government.
Oh, awesome.
In the various statistical agencies. Started at the Bureau of Labor Statistics at the Department of Labor. I also worked at the Bureau of Economic Analysis at the Department of Commerce. So I have a really good understanding of economic data. And then I also worked in the chief economist's office at the Department of Commerce for quite some time. I would say my foray into workforce development, which is my focus right now on the CHIPS program, was when I was detailed to the White House and had the opportunity to work on the American Workforce Policy Advisory Board, working to shape career pathways for all Americans and to emphasize the importance of credentials and skilling. So this is a really great opportunity, I feel like, to employ that knowledge in the CHIPS program. We have a great need for workforce development under this historic act, and I'm really honored to be a part of it. Thank you for having me here today.
Oh, thank you for being here, and thank you for your service, you know, to the country. I know for many of us, when we go to DC, it seems very overwhelming. You know, you go to the U.S. Department of Education, and it's enormous. It's blocks long, and having folks like you that know how to navigate it and really join forces with people that are entrepreneurs, have a business background, and dedication to service makes a big difference for all of us. And I think with workforce and some of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast, the work that we do at the National Association for Community College Entrepreneurship directly connects to workforce, because as you know, both know better than anyone, you know, there is that gap, and we see community colleges really playing a key role in credentialing and micro-credentialing. So we talked just a few minutes ago, Donna, about the CHIPS program, and I would love for you to talk a bit about that for people that might not know what that stands for. And then, Jessica, we can go to you and talk about how does that connect to workforce a little bit more.
Well, you know, semiconductors are the foundation of industry and future industries today. I mean, I've started to think of them as much like DNA is the building block of biology, semiconductors are the building block of the built world. And everything is based on semiconductors. So it's strategically important to our country to have a strong position. Now, semiconductors were invented in the U.S. Semiconductors were created in, you know, an industry grew up out of the U.S. early leadership, but that's changed over time. And what's changed is that one of the biggest changes is that the manufacturing of semiconductors has moved pretty much overseas. And so the CHIPS Act was created with two massive objectives. One was to bring back manufacturing of leading edge semiconductors into the U.S. That's important both from a supply chain perspective, make sure we have the parts we need when we need them, but also it's important from a perspective of invention in the future because the manufacturing process and the design process are highly intertwined. These are the most sophisticated, hardest things to manufacture in the entire world. You can't believe how complex these are. So that's something that we need to have here in the U.S. The second piece of it is to stay ahead on the design side. The U.S. has continued to stay ahead on the design side, but we have been at risk, and particularly workforce is one of the areas why we focus so much on it, because we don't have as much of the expertise as we used to have in this country. So making sure that we have the expertise for the future, that we stay ahead in design, and that we bring manufacturing back is the purpose of the CHIPS Act. It's a total $52 billion, of which $50 billion is being implemented by the Commerce Department to help do those goals.
Yeah, that's so important. And, you know, the timing actually of this conversation is really interesting. I just got back from Boston yesterday. I was at MIT where we are meeting with our partners, the Lemelson MIT program. NACI's going to be holding a conference in the middle of the summer, well, actually the middle of June, where we're focusing on making an invention and really trying to think about how can we get faculty and staff to think about, you know, not maybe teaching in the traditional way, but thinking about all kinds of things and semiconductors. And it's our hope that community colleges can get into that. So Jessica, as we go over to you, share a little bit more about workforce and, you know, with the CHIPS program and all of the investment on behalf of the government and all these other things, what do you expect to see or what are your goals to impact in a positive way workforce?
Well, as Donna mentioned, we're trying to really jumpstart the semiconductor industry here in the United States, and that can't be done without a workforce. And the semiconductor workforce has been pretty much stagnant in terms of its size for the past decade. Right now, the training across the country for these jobs is pretty fragmented. The programs are small. They just don't churn out the number of workers that are going to be required for this major investment into the industry. So there's a great need for a lot of new investment in workforce for the different roles that are needed. And so some of those roles are not only the engineers and the PhD and advanced degree folks that do a lot of the design and software development and, you know, the real research side of things, but also the workers in the facilities. So we need people that are going to operate the machines. These are highly skilled technicians, but typically they don't require a four-year degree, but they do require specialized training. And so we're trying to figure out which programs exist now that we can scale up quickly to get a workforce trained. We're trying to figure out what the current workforce needs are before these investments go out to see how the Department of Commerce can partner with other government agencies under this historic act to take action now. We also need a large construction workforce because we're building a lot of facilities. You know, we're trying to figure out how to balance the need for a construction workforce with all the other major spending bills that have recently been passed in the federal government. So there's a lot of coordination that's happening across different agencies, also across states, community colleges, industry organizations, lots of moving parts. But ultimately, what we need is a very strong workforce, well-trained, and we need a pipeline of future workers so that we can keep a sustained flow of skilled workers going into this industry over time.
Yeah, it's interesting. A guest that we had on Forward with NACI a few weeks ago was the spokesperson for the National Contractors Association. And he was telling us a little bit about, you know, that industry. And what's interesting about it is a lot of the work that we do on the equity front, trying to, you know, advance opportunities for maybe first generation students or, you know, people of color, you know, people that have kind of been left behind, is that the work that you're doing really advances that agenda. It helps business. It helps people kind of that onboard into the middle class. So Jessica, you had mentioned, you know, identifying good models and sort of scaling them up. Are there any that come to mind that you could maybe give an example of that you're taking a look at as a you know, something that you think is working?
Sure. So Secretary Raimondo is a big fan of apprenticeships. And you know, we have partnered closely with the Department of Labor and their Registered Apprenticeship Program to learn more about how we can build registered apprenticeships into the semiconductor training landscape. And so there's many organizations, two in particular right now, that are working very actively to try to build up registered apprenticeships in the semiconductor industry. And Commerce is currently figuring out how to support these efforts. What we like about registered apprenticeships is that it allows workers to earn a wage while they're learning. This really opens up opportunity for many workers that can't necessarily afford to take on training on their own without earning a wage. And the employers support them as they go through their training. It's also wonderful for employers because employers get to train these employees in the actual ways that their companies operate right from the get-go. So they don't have to untrain people. They don't have, you know, from their old ways, from former companies. People get hands-on experience right from the start. What we also like about registered apprenticeships is that it really is a great way to increase diversity in the sector, like you mentioned. We really want to create new opportunities for a different pool of workers than traditionally have entered this industry. So the industry is underrepresented by women and also people of color. And registered apprenticeships often have nice targeted recruitment strategies and wraparound services that can help bring underrepresented people into these programs. So that is one area that we're really trying to focus on right now.
Yeah. And I think especially for women, I know I spent years of my career before coming to NACI working at a community college as a vice president. And it seemed to me that a lot of women would gravitate toward human services degrees or childcare, which is wonderful. But, you know, the reality is you can't earn a living wage. And some of the women in particular were old, you know, older, not old, but maybe in their 30s or 40s, had children to support. And really, I think providing that apprenticeship where they can earn money and they can also, you know, kind of better their lives and their children can have a better opportunity. So the CHIPS Act now, tell us a little bit more. You had mentioned, Donna, that you have a newsletter and people might be able to, you know, learn more about it. So share with us a little bit, how can they sign up for that? And what kind of information do you anticipate sharing? Is that for employers? Is it for, you know, average citizens?
Yes, we have a website. Thank you for asking. CHIPS.gov. Please sign up for our email list on that website. That is our formal place. We are announcing any initiatives, any new information. There's webinars there. There's lots of stuff there. You know, there's two, I think, major avenues for educational institutions to think about how to participate in this program. And I'd like to just plant that seed. So one avenue is that on the manufacturing side, as I described, there's sort of two big chunks of this program. On the manufacturing side, where we're working to build more fabs, they're called fabs, not plants in the industry jargon, trying to build more fabs. And those fabs, as Jessica described, they need workers, they need operators, they need, and when she said construction, it's like high-end construction workers. It's people who can build clean rooms and very sophisticated, install very sophisticated machinery. So these are really good paying, high-skilled jobs. There's an opportunity to partner with those fabs in getting them built and getting them operating. The big companies who are building those are in, you know, certain geographies. Intel is in Ohio, TSMC is in Arizona, and so on. But they are partnering locally with community colleges. We've seen these partnerships already in terms of saying, help us get ready to train this influx of workers. And understanding in your region, do you have that activity going on? Are there potential partners to connect with? Reach out to them, get in front of them, say, here's how we can partner. So that's one thing that I think your audience could look at doing. The second part is on the research side. That tends to be more leaning towards the higher degree, you know, maybe 4-year, you know, master's, PhD level degrees. So, you know, maybe less of your audience will participate, but there also is technology sectors and engineers and operators that are involved there. And the R&D effort is going to take a little longer to roll out. It's a little long-term as opposed to the immediacy of the manufacturing effort. But if you stay on our email list, we will be publishing more information about that. What is our vision for workforce development? How do we expect to partner? Just to give an example, one of the things that I think is really important is that students need to sense how exciting it is to work on this stuff. And the way they sense that it's exciting is to do it. You know, the whole maker movement, and to actually design and then build a chip. That's something that we want people to do and see it working its magic. Well, you know, colleges, we understand it's hard to get this equipment. It's expensive to get this training. We'll likely have grant programs to enable that. We want to excite people to be investing in these things. So when we get to that point, that the email list will be the best place to get informed about that. It's premature to announce those programs, but they are things that we are actively thinking about.
That's just so exciting. And I think just the partnership model that you're looking at, that's something, you know, we published a book during the pandemic, and it was really about impact ed. And, you know, one of the premises were, you know, if you want to go fast, you go alone. If you want to go far, you go together, and you connect these networks of networks and you share information. And I think that's exciting for people. On the NACI board, most of our board, we're a nonprofit association, is made up of community college presidents, but we have one association, the American Association for Community Colleges. Their senior vice president of workforce development, Jen Worth, is on our board. And so we partner together. Their national conference is in January. And that's a theme that they have is really apprenticeships. And I know there's a lot of government interaction, I imagine. I don't know if you're going to be there, but I certainly people who are listening. So I just think raising awareness and being hopeful about it, because, you know, Jessica, you had mentioned your background being involved with economics and research. And I know a lot of people, you know, are kind of looking at, you know, with hopefulness, the gas prices, at least at the recording stage we're at now, are going down, which is really great. But, you know, there is this situation where we still have jobs available. So it feels, you know, like the window is still open, but we have to act. So maybe, I don't know if you have a final thought in terms of just generally, you know, in terms of the economy and some of the hopeful signs, but some of the things that we have to keep an eye on, why this particular CHIPS program and the work that you all are doing is so important to the recovery of the economy.
Well, you know, I think we all, you know, heard a lot about the supply chain bottlenecks that occurred during COVID. And, you know, that was a major cause of inflation. And, you know, if you can't get parts and things are scarce, the price is going to go up. So, you know, as Donna mentioned in the beginning here, this resiliency of our supply chain is extremely important. You know, car makers can't sell cars if they don't have these chips. And that was a major cost of, you know, I think used cars and new cars were some of the highest inflated items during the height of the pandemic. And so now as we work through these things and we understand maybe how we need to be more resilient and understand our supply chains more, I think this is one opportunity where we can really start to dig into that. And just, you know, sort of touching back on sort of a conversation that, you know, had been started with you and Donna a second ago about partnerships, I just want to really reemphasize that. In terms of the workforce too, we're really pushing for sectoral partnerships. We find that to be so important. I just want to reemphasize that point. And part of that partnership will be creating career pathways so that even from, you know, earning a technical degree, there's a clear pathway and a connection to how you can even go on and earn a 4-year degree post achieving that, you know, associate's degree or 2-year degree. I think that's also really important for our economy to help people move up and you know, increase their quality of life and earn better wages. You know, be able to really advance through the system in a very supported way. You know, I think these are just really great opportunities that we have under the CHIPS Act.
Well, you both are great spokespeople for that. And you know, what one of the messages that we always try to deliver that I've seen this over and over again is really, you know, being a lifelong learner means, and we see this all the time at community college graduations, you know, the youngest student is usually maybe 16 that was maybe a homeschooled child that, you know, took community college classes. And then all the time, there are people in their 60s or 70s. One student in particular, I remember back when I worked for Rowan College at Burlington County, she was 70 and she had just earned a degree in audiology because she was a nurse and she didn't want to stop working. And there were certain things she couldn't do. And I think the message of apprenticeships is you don't have to be, you know, 18 years old or 20 years old. And so I just think you both are just fantastic leaders and spokespeople for this. So I hope people that are listening will find out more about the CHIPS program. Let's give the website one more time just in case people missed that.
chips.gov, www.chips.gov.
Can't get any easier than that. Well, I thank you both. I hope that you have a great day. I hope our listeners, if this information is not for you, that you pass it along to family and friends that can benefit from it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Really appreciate the opportunity and the work that you and your colleagues do. It's very inspirational.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you will continue to explore the many ways to define entrepreneurship with NACI, as we celebrate opportunity, failing forward, and success, learning from one another along the way. Subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and follow at NACI on social media and learn more about us at NACI.com/podcast. Stay tuned for a new episode each week. We look forward to making our way forward together with you. Have you heard the exciting news? NACI recently released a new publication titled The NACI Playbook, Volume 1, all about how entrepreneurial mindset sets the new standard for success in communities and colleges. The NACI Playbook digs into entrepreneurial mindset and how practicing leadership with this framework creates an agile culture with space to innovate, co-create, fail forward, and accelerate growth. Entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial leadership require us to lean in, anticipate and recognize trends, manage change, be resilient, take risks, reflect, and rest in the knowledge that anything is possible. Learn from our innovative, insightful, generous network who navigates both challenges and opportunities entrepreneurially as we share what we've learned and how you might apply their experience to your work. We hope you'll be as inspired as we were. Learn more at www.NACIPlaybook.com.